ring the bell, Avenger? This is Movie Fighters, the show where Chris Sims and I, Matt Wilson, we watch movies and beat them up. And Chris, we're doing something a little sneaky on the show this week.
It's sneaky, but I'm excited. I'm really excited, Pat.
Now, I feel a little weird putting this out on the internet, like, as an episode of a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we're doing isn't exactly kosher. You know, it isn't exactly legal. But
it's a gray area.
It's a gray area. Look,
I mean, I technically speaking, I've already paid for a ticket.
I have two.
Yeah.
And so we just wanted to, we got it early and we were like, well, we could be the first ones to have an opinion on Avengers Endgame, like, you know, 4 or 5 days before the movie even comes out in theaters.
Yeah.
Because, folks, it leaked. It leaked, and
we found the whole thing.
We found the whole thing. It's on a website called Vudu.
It's now, a lot shorter than I expected.
Yeah, it's a brief, 89
minutes, yeah.
But look, somebody sent me a link to this website called Vudu.com, which I had never heard of before.
It's got to be some kind of weird Russian site, right?
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't call a site Vudu unless you're doing some chicanery, you know? So it's called Vudu. We got this link. I haven't actually clicked on it yet. So, but they just said, it said Avengers movie, you'll love this. And it had this link. And so I'm, you know, what else could this be? So,
and look, do we know who sent it? It could be somebody from the studio trying to get some buzz.
It was weird. You know how, like, when you get a phone call and it says unknown number?
Uh-huh.
That's what it said on the email. It, like, didn't have the sender's email address or anything. It just said, like, unknown sender.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. But to make sure that we have it, because, you know, we're already recording and everything. To make sure that we have it, I'm going to click on this link now and see what's up. See what this is.
Okay. I'm excited. Who do you think is going to show up? Is it going to, like, because apparently Adam Warlock's not going to show up until, like, Guardians 3, and I'm fine with that. But, like, do you think, like, Wolverine is going to be in it?
Chris, I have some bad news.
What's up, man?
I thought it said Avengers 2019.
Uh-huh.
You know, Avengers Endgame.
Yeah.
This link took me to a different movie called The Avengers.
What, like the first one? I mean that one's, you know, it's been long enough that I think we could get some good content out of talking about that movie. Like, I don't necessarily know if that one holds up, but I mean, you know, obviously the Battle of New York is really fun. That first time that Cap and Thor and Iron Man fight each other is really fun.
There's a genocide.
There is. Tony Stark does a genocide, but, and at the time I had a real problem with that, but then Iron Man 3 really kind of goes into that, and yeah, I really like Iron Man 3. So.
It helped. Iron Man 3 helped make it less terrible.
Yes.
But no, Chris, this is not 2012's The Avengers.
I don't want to watch Age of Ultron.
It's not that one. It's not Infinity War. This is 1998's The Avengers.
I don't...
With Uma Thurman and Ralph Fiennes and Sean Connery.
Oh, you mean the movie reboot of the 1960s British spy series.
The TV show. And...
Yeah.
Where
Sean Connery has, like, a weather dominator, like Cobra Commander.
Here's the other thing. I can't close this window. It's going to make me watch this movie.
Yeah, I'm locked in. I don't know how this is happening. I promised.
But first of all, I promised the anonymous person we'll definitely watch this.
Yeah.
I said, thank you so much. We'll definitely watch this. And now I can't even, like, it's the only thing on my computer screen now. I hope this is still recording the podcast because I can't even get back to Zencastr are the thing we used for podcasting. Like, my screen is filled with Avengers 1998.
Yeah, I guess we, I guess.
I don't
who
think.
Sent, who sent it, Matt? Who did this to us?
I'll do some research later. I don't think it's going to unlock until we watch this movie.
Yeah, I'm trying to force quit, and it's not happening. It's, we're stuck.
We got to watch it. So, I'm sorry, everybody. I really thought we had a complete leaked copy of Avengers Endgame.
Well, maybe. Look. I like Uma Thurman. I like Ralph Fiennes. I like Sean Connery. The 1960s Avengers is fun.
Now, do you have any history with the TV show much? Have you watched much of it?
Well, I've read a lot of Chris Claremont X-Men comics, so I feel like I've watched it.
All I know about it is that it had that show also had a fun cast.
Yeah, Diana Rigg famously
Rigg, the most famous of the bunch. Yeah,
yeah. You could put a gun to my head, and I could not tell you who played John Steed.
His name was Patrick McNee.
Patrick McNee. Okay. Yeah.
Also, Honor Blackman was on the show for a while.
Honor Blackman, who was a Bond girl.
Yes.
Whose Bond name is like equally improbable as her real name, which is Honor.
Mm-hmm.
Which is Honor Blackman. They did give her the most Bond name, which is Pussy Galore.
Yes. So she
was
on.
How did that happen, Matt? They used to show that movie on TV.
There's a movie called Octopussy that used to come on all the time on TBS.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Honor Blackman was the first of the ladies on the show, Kathy Gale. Emma Peel, played by Diana Rigg, did not show up until the third season. But the movie is all Emma Peel.
Yeah.
Who kind of became the face of the show. So.
Yeah, and she was the one who was in the famous episode that inspired the Dark Phoenix saga. Like, there's an episode where she's in the Black Queen outfit from the Hellfire Club that your boys, Claremont and Byrne, liked a lot.
It had a huge influence on the both of their careers. Here's what else I know about the movie. It had a $60 million budget and made $48.6 million at the box office. Not great. It was directed by Jeremiah S. Chechik, who also directed National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation and Benny and June.
Those are two very interesting movies to get what was essentially like a franchise reboot action adventure movie.
Yeah, and I think he's done a few movies since then, but not a ton. I think the Avengers 1998 sort of tanked it for him. Also worth noting, this won the 1998, or I guess 99, Razzie Award for worst remake or sequel.
Great.
It was critically panned. It has a 5% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Maybe it's a buried treasure. Also, I'm surprised that you're getting all this information since we're both staring at a paused black screen because we can't click out of Vudu.
Oh, apparently I can access the IMDb and Wikipedia pages for this movie.
But just this movie?
Yeah.
You know, Matt, honestly, we played ourselves with this one. We should have just waited till next weekend.
Guess what? We played ourselves.
Yeah.
It is currently residing at 3.7 out of 10 stars on IMDb.
Oh, boy.
So, Jeremiah Chechik has a good number of directing credits, but after the Avengers, they all become TV credits.
Okay.
If that tells you anything. All right. Well, I guess it's just time to do this, Chris. Yeah. So
look, it's only 89 minutes, which if we weren't trapped into watching it, like if we had decided to do this movie, that probably would have been the deciding factor.
Yeah, the short runtime would have been a nice thing. Before we spend 89 minutes watching this movie, Chris, it's time for the hottest segment in all of podcasting, Snack Situation. Chris, what are you snacking on?
Matt, what are you snacking on first?
Chris, I decided to go very mega classic.
Mm-hmm.
One thing about the website Vudu, V-U-D-U, which is actually, I believe, owned by the company Walmart.
Weird. Okay.
It has this movie for free with ads. And the first ad that came up, which I've already played because I don't want to sit here and have to spend 20 seconds watching an ad when we could be burning through this movie. The first ad was for Orville Redenbacher movie theater butter popcorn.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm eating right now.
You mentioned that to me, and I was like, Matt, wouldn't it be bomb as hell if I went and made some Orville Redenbacher popcorn and we both had it?
And we did. Is it the movie theater butter?
Mine is the like Orville Redenbacher like classic.
Okay.
Which I think is the best one that they make.
It's not the like fancy ass Orville Redenbacher that comes in the like artisan bag and it's like a small sprinkling of sea salt or whatever that flavor is.
It might be, but I don't know. I was not concerned with what was on the bag as much as what was in it.
Yeah, I get it. I had to go for that movie theater butter.
I am also planning, once I'm through this bowl of popcorn, I have a post popcorn treat, which is that I have a PPT, a bonus snack situation, a BSS. I have a pint of Ben and Jerry's Brewed to Matter, which is an exclusive Target flavor.
Is that coffee stuff?
It's like coffee chocolate. Yeah.
Okay. At first I thought like beer ice cream. Okay. But you wouldn't eat that.
No, not at all. Matt, I have an update on some bad news.
Oh no.
This movie has been declared. It is on the Wikipedia entry list of films considered the worst. Now, Matt, well, it's on here with Batman and Robin.
Which, hey,
is not as bad as everyone thinks.
Yeah.
And I find to be rather enjoyable. Superman 4 is on here. Superman 4 is pretty bad. Here's what's got me worried. Also on this list, Myra Breckinridge, arguably the worst movie we have watched.
For movie fighters, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
This movie's badness is not going to be anywhere close to Myra Breckinridge's badness.
Surely not. But
I think it's probably going to be closer to Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
Which I wonder, 21 years later, if we're going to say this movie is campy fun, which is not what audiences in 1998 were looking for at all.
This is a quote from Janet Maslin, who compared it to Howard the Duck. At a pared down, barely rational 100 minutes, The Avengers is short, but not short enough.
Our version is shorter than that.
Yeah. Oh boy.
So I don't know. Howard the Duck is at least interesting. So I'm hoping for at least interesting from this.
We're just trying desperately at this point. We're grasping at straws.
There is, I guess, since we're talking about runtime, I will bring up this point from IMDb.
Mm-hmm.
The original cut of this movie was 115 minutes.
Mm. Ours is 89.
Yeah, so this...
We're missing a full half hour.
It has a list of cut scenes. We will determine, because a lot of movies, when we get done with them, we're like, this could have been 20 minutes shorter, you know? they've done that for us.
Yeah. So what we know going in is that Avengers 98 is lean.
It has been cut to the bone. So if you would like to watch along with us, you can go to voodoo.com and watch it with ads like we're going to do. And then, either way, we're going to watch the movie. You're going to hear a musical interlude and an ad. And then we're going to come back and talk about it. And we're back from watching 1998's The Avengers. And it was bad.
Matt, why do we even bother hoping for anything anymore?
I want to get into, like, the level of badness of this movie in our final thoughts. So let's just run through what happens in this movie, which is kind of not a lot.
Certainly not a lot that makes sense.
So we are introduced in what is probably the best sequence in the whole movie at the beginning.
Matt, are you forgetting the 3-minute opening credits? Because I do want to point that out right here up top.
There were 3 minutes of opening credits and 5 minutes of closing credits, which meant there were actually 80 minutes of movie.
And they weren't like stylish or fun opening credits. It was like stock footage and people's names in any font from any video game from 1998.
And the stock footage was of weather because the movie's all about weather.
Yeah.
So the best sequence probably in the whole movie is right at the beginning where we meet John Steed, played by Ralph Fiennes, who is walking through what looks like your typical British village, and everybody keeps trying to kill him. As I said as we were watching it, he's being John Wicked.
Yeah.
So the milkman tries to kill him, the mail carrier tries to kill him, a little kid tries to kill him, a bunch of nuns.
The nuns don't.
Oh, they don't. That's right.
The nuns don't try to kill him, and so he just doffs his hat.
But, you know, everybody's trying to kill him. Then it's revealed that that is a training exercise. He was actually in a fake village, and he was, you know, doing training. And his boss, played by Jim Broadbent, who is known as Mother, you know, tells him, "Hey, good job, Steed. We got a mission for you. You gotta talk to Emma Peel about something that's going on.
You gotta go get Uma Thurman."
So Uma Thurman, who plays Emma Peel, comes to meet John at...
Uma Thurman, I think, famously known for her great British accent.
Yeah. I mean, tip top notch. Speaking of which, Uma Thurman is in two of those movies that you read out as the worst movies of all time.
Yeah. She's Poison Ivy.
Yeah.
Just, and she's in this.
Like, bad management, maybe? I don't know. But... as we've said before, Batman and Robin is not as bad as its reputation.
Yeah, I was hoping this movie would be as good as Batman and Robin, if that gives you an idea of what we're working with here.
So, Emma Peel goes to meet John at a health club?
It's a men's club.
Men's club makes it sound like a strip club, though.
It is a men's club. It's like,
it is,
you know,
it is a health club that is exclusively for men.
It's not a health club though, because it's like a club in the British sense of being a club. It just happens to have a spa room.
Well, yeah,
because there's like men sitting there reading, yeah, you know, presumably eating meals.
But John Steed is in a sauna.
Yeah,
wearing nothing. But he does have his hat next to him, which is kind of a funny little detail.
Yeah, he is butt-ass naked.
He's reading the Financial Times, which is covering his dick area.
And so if you're like real horny for Voldemort.
Yeah, this is your spot. But
this is it.
Uma Thurman just charges into this place, which has not allowed a woman in for like 150 years.
Since 1762.
Yeah, like so 250 years. Yeah. And so, but she like comes rolling in, just walks right by all the guys. They all do hilarious, huge takes that a woman is entering this place. And she goes and finds John, and they talk for a long time.
Yeah, and one of the things he says is, she's like, was this a test? He does not confirm that, but he did ask her to meet him there, apparently. And he's like, you don't play by the rules. And she's like, rules were made to be broken. And he's like, playing by the rules is how you win the game.
It's the first of many conversations between the two in the movie where a lot gets said, but also nothing gets said.
Yeah. And does that – it really does establish their characters though, because, you know, Emma Peel's kind of a rule breaker, loose cannon. And Steve, he's kind of uptight. Oh, no, wait. That never comes back.
No.
It's not established at all.
And it's so easy to get lost in the sort of like fluff that they're always saying, because they're constantly just trying to like one up each other with wit, or like act like they're more nonplussed than the other one all the time. That you can miss like actual details that matter. Like there's a discussion here about how she's Dr. Peel, and she corrects him that she's Mrs. Peel.
She says, you can call me Mrs. Peel,
which is her way of saying like, hey, don't try to get with me because I'm married. And then at some point later in the movie, it's revealed that she's Mrs. Peel, but her husband died.
Mm-hmm.
And I missed that completely when it was said.
And also there's like very little subtext to what they're saying. And they only seem to be responding directly to the last sentence that was said. Like they will respond to each other like two or three times to end a scene with like basically saying the same thing three times.
So they leave this.
It's not good.
They leave this club to go meet with Mother, who is the M of the movie.
Yeah.
And Mother,
which I know that is a gag from the original series too, is that the their boss is codenamed Mother.
Yeah.
But I don't know if there's a father in the original series, which should probably be a clue if you're a fan of what's going to happen in this movie.
There is only a single episode with the character father.
Okay.
So there you go. But the Mother informs the two of them that the Prospero Project, which is, I guess, a project within the ministry, which is the name of the spy organization.
Mm-hmm.
It has been sabotaged by Emma Peel.
Yeah, we don't really... They explain what Prospero is, and it's an umbrella. But, like, is it for missiles? Is it for, like...
It's a weather control project.
I thought it was, like, a weather shield project.
Either way, it's some kind of thing having to do with the weather. But, again, it is so couched in this, like, weird dialogue that's trying to be clever, so they keep calling it an umbrella, that nothing is ever clear. Nothing's ever clearly stated.
Yeah, nothing is ever clearly stated in this movie.
But they have video footage of Emma Peel going into this facility and destroying it, even though she played a role in creating the Prospero Project.
Yes.
So she says she's innocent, and instead of immediately being arrested right then and there...
Yeah, Mother is like, well... You know, I trust you enough that you can take a few days to prove your innocence. Bad plan, my dude.
Yeah,
bad plan.
She's not arrested then and there. Instead, she and Steed are told to go like find out about what's going on. So they leave Mother's office, and then it immediately cuts, but it cuts back to Mother's office, so it seems like there's a missing scene here. And then Father appears, who is described as the second in command of the ministry.
Yeah, and she is a blind woman.
She's a blind woman with short hair. And she says it seems like Emma Peel is guilty and she should be arrested, basically. And that she's, like, unstable and has schizophrenia, I think?
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that. So then we get a little sequence where Emma and John are hanging out in a clothing store, which is actually the front.
It cuts immediately to them in the middle of a sword fight in a menswear shop with no explanation.
Yeah. You have to kind
of. Like, there's clearly, like, the scene has begun and there is dialogue and we do not get it.
Yeah. And you have to kind of infer that this clothing store is basically the gadget operation for the ministry.
Something from the boys in Q Branch.
Yeah, like this is their Q. The guy's name is Trubshaw. He's Steed's quote unquote tailor, but really he's the gadget guy.
Yeah.
And again, I feel like a large chunk of this movie is based on the idea that you're definitely familiar with the TV show. So you would know that Trubshaw is the gadget guy if you have seen every episode of the TV show.
Yeah, but, like, would you? I can't figure out how much of this is supposed to be, like, a reboot and how much of this is supposed to be, like, you know, well, this one's in there for the fans.
Well, so much of it seems to be so predicated on you knowing about the TV show, though, because, like, we came into this fairly cold. I've seen maybe an episode of the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, felt like a lot was missing.
Yeah. They want to do. I mean, look, I'll tell you what happened. I was going to say this for final thoughts, but I'll tell you what happened. Somebody saw Austin Powers and was like, I could do that shit. Because it's clearly 1998 in the movie.
Yeah.
But they want to have, like, Emma Peel has a weird 60s phone, and they drive old cars and dress like it's the 60s. But it's, you know, definitely 1998, because there's furries.
And all you have to do is see Eddie Izzard to know that it's 1998, because it's Eddie Izzard is Johnny Lee Miller is the thug in this movie.
The arguably least threatening man that I am aware of, which I don't mean in a bad way, he's affable and funny. Like, he I don't believe that he could beat Ralph Fiennes or Uma Thurman in real life in a fight.
John and Emma go to see August De Winter, who is described as an old ally of the ministry. He used to work for the ministry, now he's retired. And
he has crazy theories about the weather. Like that it was manipulated by aliens. That never comes back.
He materially was involved in a lot of ministry projects, and he might know what's going on, is the thought. This is all given to us in a long, long conversation between Steed and Peel as they drive there. Yet another, like, you got to kind of parse the conversation to understand what they're saying situation. And when they arrive, we see De Winter playing the organ, and he's got, like, a big portrait of Emma Peel over the organ. So he's clearly obsessed with her. She goes in to his mansion. Ralph Fiennes, or John, decides to kind of, like, look around the grounds to find something. I don't know why they decide to do the split up like this other than the plot requires it.
Well, it's because they already know he did it is the thing.
Yeah,
Matt.
Because Steed is instantly suspicious of him, right? Like, even though he says they're going to just, like, question him, like, he's not acting like somebody who is just going to question an old ally. He's, like, searching the grounds of the house.
Yeah, like, there's a part, like, where, like, in that scene we talked about earlier, Mother goes, obviously, Mrs. Peel, you're the number one suspect. And he might as well say, number two suspect is Sean Connery. So if it wasn't you, we're pretty sure it's this guy.
When Emma Peel goes in the house, Sean Connery, like, pops up
and chokes her?
Greenhouse that he has.
Uh-huh.
And is instantly mega aggro.
Yeah, he pops up and chokes her. Like, he has his hand on her throat.
And then he's, like, inappropriately touching her throughout the their like, conversation.
He has this big indoor greenhouse, and it's raining in there, so, like, the butler gives her an umbrella, and then she's looking for him, and he pops out of the bushes and, you know, chokes her. And she's like, rather, or whatever. And then he's like, it's too wet, or whatever, and he, like, gets a towel to dry her off and is very clearly, like, groping her.
It's not fun.
Yeah, he's a real Miles Warren.
A real Miles Warren, and he's gross, and there's a lot of talk about wetness in this scene. It's not good.
Yeah.
He tries to show her this big flower that he has. The flower never comes back again either.
Yeah, he tries to get her to touch it, and I think the gag there is supposed to be that it looks like a vagina.
I guess? I don't know. None of it ever comes back. It's not important to the plot. It's nothing. But meanwhile, John is out on the grounds, and he finds this telephone box out there. And he gets inside the telephone box, which is another reference to the TV show. Because the telephone box was the way that they got to their headquarters.
Okay.
But that's not what that telephone box does. He's just in the telephone box for a while, and the weather pops off and goes wild.
Yeah, and there's a voice on the other end that's like, no trespassers, go away.
Yeah, and he walks out of the telephone box, and it has snowed within, like, the amount of time he's been in the box. Several inches of snow. The evil Emma Peel rides up on a snowmobile, hits him, and then shoots him? But he's not actually shot? Or no, I know.
Tries to shoot him with a spear gun first.
Yeah, then she shoots him with a gun, but he's wearing like a bulletproof, some kind of bulletproof vest.
Yeah, he's a literal bulletproof vest or waistcoat.
Yeah. Then they just manage to leave somehow.
Yeah, we don't see Uma Thurman leaving, but the next scene is
conversation. She and Sean Connery have a conversation about how John Steed is out there on the ground somewhere, being stuck in terrible weather.
Uh huh.
But somehow they are allowed to leave unscathed and go back to Emma Peel's apartment. We never see how they leave. We never see how they were allowed to leave. It just happens. So Ralph Fiennes is back at Emma Peel's apartment, like convalescing after having been shot. I said it while we were watching it. This movie operates by Resident Evil rules, where characters just jump around from place to place in unbelievable amounts of time. I don't get it.
Yeah, it's bad and doesn't make any sense.
Then we see a scene where Augusta Winter is holding a meeting around a meeting table where everybody
burying the lead on this one, Matt.
Everybody's in multicolored bear costumes.
Fursuits.
Fursuits.
Full-ass fursuits.
But conceivably, the idea of the fursuits is for everyone's identity to be concealed, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then Sean Connery just pops the head off and says, you all know who I am.
All of you know me, and I know all of you. Well, then why are you wearing a fursuit? In the context of the movie, it's very clearly a sex thing, right?
I guess. But then he does a Batman. He does a Joker from Batman,
mm-hmm.
where he's like, hey, if anybody's not with me on this, just let me know. Just let me know, and I'll let you go.
You say it's a Joker from Batman, but contextually it's a Christopher Walken as Zorin from View to a Kill.
Okay. And two of the people in bear suits raise their hand, and he takes these two little darts out of a brooch he's wearing and throws them at them and kills them.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what the business is about. I don't know what this meeting is supposed to indicate. I don't understand any of it. I just know that they're wearing bear costumes.
Well, here's the thing, Matt. We actually see Steed and Peele go to this business beforehand. It's not like we don't know it's the same business because it's a completely different room that looks like it's in a completely different building. But this is Wonder Weather Incorporated or something like that.
It's called Wonderland Weather.
Wonderland Weather, which is a weather controlling firm that is like public and people know about it.
Yeah.
And you can like go there and be like, I need some weather.
It's a shop you can walk into.
Yeah. And like this is not a reveal. Nothing in this movie, literally nothing in this movie, is treated as a reveal.
Well,
which is weird.
You would think that all the weird sabotage that happened to the weather protection or controlling program that the ministry had, you might connect that to this new business where you can buy your own weather.
Oh, that's run by a super scientist who used to work with the people who made the weather controlling device?
Yeah.
Nah. Come on. Get real, Matt.
There's a scene where they visit that place, yeah. And that leads to a scene where they are chasing after Sean Connery, who is still in a bear suit. And that ends with someone else in a bear suit jumping Emma Peel, then taking that bear suit head off and revealing herself to be the other Emma Peel. And you see that one Emma Peel has blue eyes and one Emma Peel has brown eyes. Then somehow they manage to get out of that, but we never see how they escape from that.
Yeah. All we get is at one point Steed's like, I thought I was seeing double.
Yeah.
That's the scene where I was like, they say three different lines that could end this scene.
Yeah.
Because she's like, just in time to save me from myself. And he's like, I thought I was seeing double. And then she says something equally stupid.
So they go and try to visit De Winter again to try to figure out what's going on here. But before they can do that, they are attacked by a bunch of CGI mechanical bees.
Mm-hmm.
Controlled by Eddie Izzard. Once they manage to shake those off, they stop their car right in front of a bicycle that is being ridden by Alice, who is another ministry agent, who is an older woman. And then we see her pull out of the bicycle basket like a Tommy gun, like a full-on straight-up Tommy gun.
Round drum and everything.
And she like starts shooting thugs. And then ends that with like a very droll, dry Britishism.
Well, she actually gets one of the only actual jokes in this part of the film, which is she like unloads on Eddie Izzard. And then like after she has emptied the clip on him, she's like, hope he was a baddie.
Yeah.
Which is pretty funny.
That was actually not too bad.
Yeah.
So then
that's the best joke in the movie, everybody.
They all go to the mansion, De Winter's mansion. They're in a hedge maze for a while.
They split up in the hedge maze after... okay, we have previously seen that Emma Peel, she wins the fencing match. So she's better at fencing.
Yeah.
She wins a chess game later. They get into this hedge maze, and she's like, oh, I know how to solve this maze. And Steed's like, shit, I don't. And, like, I'm not saying this as, like, somebody who's mad at Star Wars. I'm like, if she's going to be better than him at everything, why is he here? Which will be, like, which will carry through to the climax of the film.
She goes on into the mansion while Steed stays out in the hedge maze where he fights De Winter for 1 second. Then De Winter disappears completely. Then Steed gets knocked out by the evil Emma Peel.
Oh, we really need to give a breakdown on how that fight with Steed turns out, because they're fighting.
Yeah.
They're quipping at each other.
Yeah.
fucking Sean Connery has like a, like he's leading a marching band, like it, like he's one of the major drum majors from Drumline, because he's got this huge weird pole that he's carrying around that he's fighting with, and he knocks the umbrella out of Steed's hand up into the air, and the umbrella opens, and Steed stands there like a fucking jackass, staring up at it while it slowly drifts down in real time. And then like while that's happening, without us seeing it or without any explanation, De Winter's gone.
Yeah. Because inside the mansion, some real dark and terrible shit is going down.
Uh-huh.
De Winter drugs Emma Peel. Tries to, I'm not going to sugarcoat it, rape her.
Yeah, pretty much.
Is only interrupted by the doorbell, where he finds Alice, who is posing as like a neighborhood lady trying to sell raffle tickets. She has also revived Steed by this point. Alice has.
Mm-hmm.
So then Uma Thurman tries to escape from the mansion and finds herself in a game of the game PT.
Uh-huh.
Which you can't buy from the PlayStation store anymore, but if you've never played it, it's a game where you walk down the same hallway over and over again. She's just in like a continuing M.C. Escher painting, trying to go downstairs, but the stairs never go anywhere.
Yeah, and we actually get like an overhead shot of that that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Like, that's the one thing in the movie that's like, oh, that's kind of neat.
It's a clever visual trick.
Yeah.
We see a couple different shots of it. I actually think it's a neat idea, but it's never, like, explained.
Yeah.
Like, whether De Winter has just this impossible trap room, or she's so drugged that she doesn't understand what's going on. Like, her perception of reality is fucked up.
Yeah. I mean, contextually, it seems like it's the latter, because she jumps through a mirror and then we don't actually see what happens. There's like three cuts and then she's laying on the ground outside.
Well, the implication is that she jumps through a mirror, which is actually a window to the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Because we see Steed knocking on that window with his cane, and like the very experienced investigator that he is.
Mm-hmm.
And then she hears
umbrella,
it.
Umbrella, by the way.
It's his umbrella, you're right.
Yeah, and everything in this movie is a goddamn umbrella thing.
She hears it and jumps out of the window to the outside.
Is that what happens?
Yes.
I did not get that she heard it. I just thought that she got tired of walking through the weird hallways and the mirror was the only way out.
I believe she heard the knocking on the window, but look, anything in this movie is up for interpretation.
Yeah, you gotta infer a lot in this bad boy.
Once again, they just manage to get out of there.
Yeah, and they just leave.
The next scene we see is them at Steed's apartment, where he's giving her a pair of boots that he bought for her.
There are three different scenes in this movie where somebody gets knocked out, and then they wake up at a different place where another member of their team is like, you're awake.
But not only do they get knocked out, they get knocked out in a place that should be an imminent danger to them.
Yes.
And then in the next scene, they're somewhere totally safe.
They're home.
Yeah.
Is that how PT works?
I'm afraid to say it's not.
Okay.
In PT, it's more of a, you have to do some like really undefined things to make a phone ring. Anyway.
Matt, can we get some bonus content where you explain PT to me? Because I'm too scared to play it.
I could do that. I could do that. I still can't tell you exactly how to end that game, though. It's a real amount of guesswork. Anyway, in Steed's apartment, I kept talking about this scene being like, this movie is like both very horny and not horny at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's this whole thing where Steed is like putting the boots he got for Peel on her feet. And it seems like it's sexual. It seems like they're talking in double or single entendres. But it's also like, I don't know, very dry and clinical.
Yeah, and not in, like, a fun way. Like, it's not like... I mentioned to you a couple times while watching this. They don't seem like humans. And it's not just that they're dry and British. It's that they don't have any emotion, and they're just, like, assholes. Watching this movie is like hanging out with two assholes for an hour and a half.
I feel like
which you do every time we do this show. Thank you for listening.
Boy, oh boy. I feel like the gag is supposed to be that they're so British that they can never show that they're sweating anything. You know? Like they always have to be stiff upper lip on everything. Everything, they have a quip about whatever's happening, and they're never flustered. But when you go too far with that, your characters stop being relatable, seeming human, or have any kind of aspects to them that you can like.
Yeah, you know what is a fun thing to do in an action movie is to have two main characters who are never surprised by anything or seem like they think they're in danger from anything or seem invested in what's going on or in each other at all.
Yeah, it's not the best dynamic. Like, if you have two characters, maybe make them different from each other.
Yeah, I mean,
personality-wise?
You could have two characters who are the exact same. That's also fun and enjoyable to read.
So, okay. At Steed's apartment, Father shows up. And we learn earlier in the movie that Father and De Winter are in cahoots. They're working together.
Yeah, we learned that in a cricket match.
It's a croquet.
Croquet, sorry. Yeah. Cricket was the one they didn't do.
Cricket's the one they didn't do. They did do croquet, fencing,
and chess.
Chess, yes. There's a chess scene right before the croquet scene.
The only time, literally, that Steed looks surprised
is when he loses
at chess. Yeah.
So we find out that they're working together. Father shows up at Steed's apartment and has Peel arrested. So they take Peel to this, like, very weird jail that's more like an insane, I guess it's an insane asylum because it's a padded room and she's in a straitjacket.
Well, I think it's supposed to be like the ministry's holding her in some weird, because she's like in an oubliette.
Yeah, but it's also padded.
She's in a padded oubliette.
And she's like ranting and raving.
Yeah, that's never explained, I don't think.
It's the one time, like, it seems like maybe she's doing it for show.
But why? Like, they know she's not the one.
Whatever it is, she's, like, ranting and raving, and it's the only time in the movie she ever exhibits those personality traits.
Mm-hmm. Or any personality traits, really.
Fair. As that's going on, Steed decides to go visit an invisible guy.
Yeah, Matt, until you said it, I fucking forgot there's an invisible guy in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, straight up, a clear, like a floating pipe, who's like, yes, my experiments in camouflage went a little wild on me.
Yeah, his name is Invisible Jones.
That's actually pretty good. That's gotta be a thing from the original.
I guess. I don't know.
It's gotta be. They must have done like a bit where there's, you know,
like stuff floating around.
Yeah, like a pipe on a string.
Yeah.
Yelling it.
I'm sure in the TV show it was a lot more charming because it was obviously a string, you know?
Uh-huh.
Whereas this is like, you know, late 90s CGI effects.
Yeah, it looks bad and it is bad.
There's a part where he walks in front of a projector and you can kind of see his outline and it's weird. He looks like one of the... what was that Peter Jackson ghost movie where the ghosts are in the walls? Shit.
Was that The Frighteners?
The Frighteners. Yes, he looks like a Frightener.
Can't believe I got that one.
He looks like a Frightener. Had Michael J. Fox in it.
Yes.
But
looks like he's using a stealth boy.
Yes. That's very good. That scene is also weird and confusing because Steed shows up.
We get new information in that scene.
Yes. Steed shows up to this guy's office with this map that he found at Winter Wonderland. And he's got questions about the map. But the map ends up being totally unimportant. Except that I think it shows that De Winter's base of operations is an island in the middle of London.
Uh-huh.
Which I guess is in the middle of the Thames.
I guess.
Anyway.
What man can say?
What man can say? It's an island in the middle of London. But aside from that, we also find out that not only was De Winter involved in Project Prospero, he was also involved in, oh right, a cloning project that the ministry had.
Yeah. And so, like, immediately Steed is like, oh, that explains the Uma Thurman clone.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. So it's not really, like, again, nothing's played as a reveal.
And the Invisible Man already knows that De Winter and Father are working together.
Yeah.
He just casually drops it. And Steed is like, oh, right, of course.
Yes. That's what they say a lot in this movie.
So, look, I'm just going to tell you straight up. I don't remember how Emma Peel gets out of the padded cell that she's in.
Steed goes and gets her?
Yeah, that makes as much sense as anything. I honestly don't remember at all.
Yeah. It's not really worth remembering, Matt.
But she gets out of there somehow. And De Winter shows up in full Scotsman garb.
To a meeting of...
every world leader.
The UN?
The UN that's not happening at the UN, that's happening in London.
Yeah.
And he gives a speech about how you don't control your weather, or your weather is not just up to God anymore. I control it now. I have power over all your weather, and to get the weather you want, you're going to have to buy it from me, and you're going to pay a pretty penny for it.
And then he, like, golf swings. There's a lot of, like, Scrooge McDuck in Connery's performance in this, because he, like, golf swings a globe, and then the globe, which is obviously bad CGI, flies straight at the camera.
Yeah, even though there are multiple camera angles that we see in that particular scene.
Yeah.
So it knocks out the camera, it goes fuzzy, and he tells, but before he hits the globe, he says, everybody has until midnight tonight to pay up.
GMT, presumably.
Yeah, it's got to be GMT. To pay up. As part of his process for holding the world ransom, he starts a giant snowstorm in London that is so bad that people are, even indoors, having to start fires and bundle up.
Yeah.
Like, everybody's complaining about how terribly cold it is. Oh, okay. Emma doesn't escape the padded room.
Okay. Did you remember?
I'm reading a summary, and now I've been reminded. She is taken out of the padded room and put in a hot air balloon by Father and her clone.
Yeah, I literally asked you, what is up with this balloon? Because I did not know.
Sincerely just there for a set piece. That is the only reason for it. Because instead of being, like, safely in her padded cell, Emma Peel in the balloon can, like, crawl up to the controls of the thing and start, like, pulling out wires and hoses so that the balloon starts losing altitude and eventually crashes into the Wonderland weather neon sign, which is, like, high above the city skyline of London.
Yeah, again, you'd think they would just be like, can we just go to that office building and deal with these guys?
You would think. So that is the end of the Emma Peel clone. Like, yeah, she's done.
See you at the crossroads. Now, here's something weird about this movie. The classic fan favorite Emma Peel outfit, the leather catsuit.
Yeah.
The bad Emma Peel wears that.
Yep. Until she dies.
Until she dies after trying to murder the good Emma Peel several times. And that's when the good Emma Peel is like, I can wear this now. Which is weird.
Yeah, the only explanation is that the good Emma Peel takes it off of the bad Emma Peel's corpse.
Yeah, the explanation is that the good Emma Peel sees it and is like, you know, I look pretty good in that, actually. Like, oh, is that what my hair looks like? Okay, cool.
It's a solid look.
Yeah.
She just looks at that dead, smoldering body and is like, solid her body. Look.
Her dead, smoldering body. And that's is right. Like, got to get that.
So, finally, Peel and Steed go to the island in the middle of London to try to disable De Winter's weather machine. They split up again. Peel goes into this like big bathysphere thing that is hanging on some wires above a giant pool with a catwalk under above it. She gets inside of that thing to like start trying to disable it, and it takes her a while. Meanwhile, Steed is fighting with Sean Connery down on that catwalk that's right above the water.
Mm-hmm.
Long story short, that fight lasts for a while. Steed ends up stabbing Sean Connery in the dick.
Yeah, that's how that ends. Also, I had the question, why is Steed fighting him? Because Peel is doing the, like, dealing with the machine that is controlling the weather, which is the problem. So, again, why is Steed here?
I don't know, but there's the scene where De Winter dies is very extra. Because not only does he get stabbed in the dick, he then gets zapped with lightning, thrown into the air, zapped with lightning again, and then his like body like burns up in midair while he's screaming and laughing.
Yeah.
It's very like 90s bad guy death scene.
Boy, is it.
Yeah. Then Peel manages to like get the weather machine mostly disabled, but she has to unplug one last plug. And there are three plugs, red, black, and green. And she doesn't know which one to pull. So she just kind of goes, eeny, meeny, miny, moe. And she just pulls one. And it works. It gets disabled. She, definitely not exiting this piece of machinery in the safest way possible, dives off of the thing into the water below. And then the whole place explodes. Cut to
a soft landing in the notoriously pleasant Thames.
That's right. Cut to mother sitting in his office talking about how, boy, that was a rough one. It's too bad we lost Steed and Peel. And just then, the bathysphere pops up in the middle of the Thames. And we see Steed and Peel in there talking about how it's great that they survived. Which I observed is exactly like the ending of Moonraker.
Mm-hmm.
Where we see James Bond and whoever the Bond girl in that movie was.
Don't remember.
Floating in a body of water in like a space capsule. After they've come back to Earth. The difference is though, they fuck. Peel and Steed, they share one kiss earlier in the movie and then have a long conversation about how it was only technically a kiss. Like, people who don't have emotions are not good movie characters.
Yeah. Like, that's why Spock and Data got emotions all the time.
Anyway, they're the characters who are different from everybody else who are very emotional. Kirk is very emotional. Anyway,
very emotional right now.
I am. You're not wrong. They share a glass of champagne with Mother, and that's the end of the movie. Chris, do we have any high points for 1998's The Avengers?
Nope.
I have a couple.
I'm very interested to hear them.
I think there are some decent gags in the movie. I think the thing at the beginning where Steed is going through the training course is pretty funny. I think the thing where he's in the sauna and he has his hat next to him, even though none of the rest of his clothes are there, is funny.
I have counterpoints for literally all of these.
I think the introduction of Alice is funny.
Alice is funny. That's the one.
Alice gets, like, totally thrown away as a character.
Yeah.
Does she, like, even return after...
Yeah, she comes back and delivers DeWinter's demands.
Right. That's right. DeWinter sends her back with demands. That's right.
And here is a joke. Here's a joke in this movie. They ask... Mother asks Alice, did he torture you? And she stops for a second and goes, no, he didn't have to. He already knew everything.
Yeah.
Which is this entire movie. Everybody already knows everything all the time. No one cares.
I feel like that's kind of a sly joke about the movie itself. Which might in itself be a high point. I actually think the character of Alice altogether is great. I like Alice.
Okay.
The actress who plays her is Eileen Atkins, and she's fantastic.
She certainly gets the most done.
Yeah.
In the movie.
I like the actress who plays Alice a lot. I have to say. And that might be it. That might be it.
Do you want me to refute your high points?
Well, let's go into low points and you can do it there.
Okay.
All right, Chris, low points of 1998's The Avengers.
The training sequence. Why is it a training sequence? Because, like, they show you this thing where he does all this cool stuff, and they're like, oh, but it wasn't real. So, like, he knew that there were going to be, like, people trying to kill him. So he didn't actually do anything.
Look, my appreciation of the scene has nothing to do with it making sense in the context of the movie. I just think it's funny that, like, he walks by a milkman and the milkman tries to kill him.
The milkman does break two milk bottles and try and slash his throat, which seems very aggro for training, but, you know.
Yeah.
I guess you got to do a live fire exercise every once in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything in this movie sucks. The dialogue is all placeholder dialogue.
The dialogue is... It's a not clever person trying to be clever.
Yeah. The dialogue's all... We'll come back and punch this up in a second.
There are several points in this movie where there was a line of dialogue said where clearly the writer of this movie, whose name is Don McPherson, is trying to, like, he clearly thinks it is the funniest line in the history of lines, of, like, movie lines. Like, he is so proud of himself. And they're just clunkers. They're just bad.
They're very bad.
Like, I'm going to try to find a good example. Chris, you can go on about other low points while I try to figure this out.
The plot is, like, missing half of the plot. I mean, I said before, like, everybody knows everything all the time. But, like, there's never, like, nothing. There's nothing in this movie that is played as a reveal. Ever. Ever. It's all just, like, you know, people investigating things they already know to be true. Which is weird.
Yeah, I don't get that at all. I like the whole conceit of no surprises really being a surprise. I feel like it's the movie trying to be contrarian. It's trying to do something that doesn't happen in spy movies where, like, you know, in regular spy movies, the twist is everything, you know? Like, big reveals are the most important part of the movie. But here...
It's because they're stories.
Yeah. Here they're nothing. Nothing matters. People find out information and they're like, oh, yeah, of course. I knew that already. It's partially because it feels like the focus of the movie, like what the movie is far more interested in, is the relationship between Steed and Peele. Which is so deeply uninteresting.
Yeah, we have no reason to care about either of them. Like they're not fun or clever. Like, the movie tells us several times how smart Emma Peel is.
Yeah.
But she doesn't, like... Like, when it comes down to it, she stops the bomb by going, ah, fuck it, it's one of these wires.
Yeah.
Which would be funny if it was meant to be, if it was set up and paid off like a joke, which it is not.
If I'll go back to some things we said during the watching of this movie. At one point, I said, Chris, what do you know about these characters? And then I turned that into, why do you care if they get together?
Mm-hmm.
We are given no reason to care. You know? Like, there's no reason to care about them as people.
Yeah.
The other thing is something you said, where you said, this movie either needs to be 1,000% more silly or 1,000,000 times more serious.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely true. It needed to pick a lane. It's trying to have it both ways, where it's kind of like a farcical parody of a spy movie, or it's actually a spy movie, which I think is the tone of the TV show, where it like tries to be the thing, but it's also kind of campy and goofy. But this movie does not find the balance.
Not at all.
It's not there. Let's see. I found a couple August de Winter lines that I think the writer probably thought maybe weren't clever, but were like campy bad guy dialogue. And I don't know if it's Connery's delivery of these or the fact that they're just bad. But at one point he says, "Rain or shine, all is mine."
He says that during the fight, and that's when he knocks the umbrella away, and then we don't get any like payoff for that fight at all.
There's also a line he says when he first gets on the TV at the meeting of all the world leaders, where he says, "Now wish the winter of your discontent." Which, again, I imagine a writer just being like, "This is great."
It's yeah. Your first draft is always fun.
Also, there's one very small thing that I have to point out from this movie. From the beginning, Ralph Fiennes is talking about how Mother loves macaroons. He even gives Mother a box of macaroons at the beginning.
Uh-huh.
And they go to Mother's office and they're having tea. And they're eating these cookies, or I guess biscuits, which they keep calling macaroons, which do not look anything like what anyone would call macaroons.
The other day, the weather was very bad here, and I was watching the news. Aiden and I were watching the news, and I saw someone talk about how they had tried to like go into a hotel to take shelter because there were like tornadoes out on the highway, and that the hotel told them they could come in, but they had to leave their dog outside. And that made me so mad that I said like the most Southern thing I've ever said, which Aiden will not stop repeating to me. She's like, "Yeah, baby, the Southern just jumped right out of you."
I got to hear what it was.
I said, if I went into that place and I was like, "Hey, there's a tornado out here," and they were like, "Leave your dog outside," I'd say, "Suck my dick and call the cops if you want. Biscuit's coming in with me."
For some reason, my guess for what you had said would have just been, "I'm so mad I could spit," which is my favorite Southernism.
Well, I say all that to say that, like, then in that last scene where Mother is eating what they have called a macaroon consistently for this entire movie, Matt Wilson goes, "That's a damn pecan sandy." Which, what's up, Shelby?
It did look like a pecan sandy, though.
No, it you were not wrong at all. You, like, you were 100% accurate.
It wasn't a little coconut cookie, which is what an actual macaroon is. And it wasn't a meringue sandwich cookie, which is a macaron. Mm-hmm. It was a pecan sandy.
Yes.
Chris, what are our final thoughts about 1998's The Avengers?
I think the movie to compare this to is not Batman and Robin. The movie to compare this to is Wild Wild West.
It is very similar to Wild Wild West. I think you're right.
Yeah, because it's, you know, it's the kind of campy, modernized reboot.
Of a TV show. Of
the TV show.
Yeah.
But I will say this. Having watched Wild Wild West relatively recently, Wild Wild West is so much better than this movie.
I mean, I think you're probably right. I mean, I think Wild Wild West is not good.
I wouldn't say it's good, but it is better than this. Like, there's redeeming qualities to Wild Wild West. Will Smith is quite good in it.
I don't think this is not Myra Breckinridge bad.
Oh, no, absolutely not. Like,
this is not I feel sick at the end of it bad, you know?
Yeah.
It's just kind of dumb and things don't make sense and it doesn't have things connecting scenes and that sort of thing. But as far as, like, making me feel physically bad, this movie didn't do that.
Yeah, well, it's like we said about, like, Suicide Squad when we watched it. Like, it's bad, but it's like, you know, Man of Steel, or no, I was talking about Justice League. Man of Steel and Batman v Superman are, like, morally reprehensible. Suicide Squad is bad, but it's just regular bad. And this movie's just regular bad.
This movie's just regular bad. The acting is pretty bad. The characters are bad.
Yeah, the acting is bad, which is weird because it's Ralph Fiennes and Uma Thurman, two actors that I certainly have seen in things and enjoyed. Like, I think Uma Thurman's great.
Well, if you don't know what the tone of a movie is, you can't act to it.
Well, also, everything seems like, I mentioned very early in the film, I was like, this is like a table read.
Yeah.
Because there's no, in doing the really, like, dry sort of, yeah, it's quiet. Like, they're not affecting emotion in any of their dialogue. Like, any emotion in their dialogue.
I mean, there's also something intangible about it. There's just no chemistry between Ralph Fiennes and Uma Thurman.
Absolutely not. No, zero.
I think that may be the difference between this and the Avengers TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, I think people liked the Avengers TV show because Diana Rigg kind of gave off this, like, magnetism.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, Uma Thurman's great. She doesn't give off any kind of anything in this movie.
Yeah.
Except making you, like, the difference between M. Appeal and clone M. Appeal is evil clone M. Appeal shoots people sometimes. Otherwise, there's no and one has brown eyes and one has blue eyes, and otherwise there's no demonstrable difference.
Yeah, clone M. Appeal never talks, which I feel like in this case is a benefit.
Yeah. Okay, before we wrap this up.
Oh, I've got more to complain about, Matt.
Okay.
No, okay. Like, again, it is admirable to, in the 90s, be like, hey, it's the 90s. We're going to take this old TV show and we're going to, you know, buff up the female lead so that she's got a little more going on. That's great. And I highly support it. If you do that, you do, like, have to explain why the other person's there. And this movie doesn't. Like, I don't want M. Appeal to be less good at things. I want Steed to be good at anything.
That's fair.
Which he's not.
All right. I mentioned earlier, before we watched the movie, that there's a list of cut scenes on IMDb.
Okay.
That reduced this movie from 115 minutes to 89. I'm just going to read the list and we'll see if the movie would have made more sense with these additional scenes. Apparently there was an opening sequence where evil Emma does the thing we see her doing in the video, where she infiltrates the secret base. She enters through a red phone booth by saying, "How now, brown cow," which is referenced later in the movie. So that would make that make more sense, at least. She gains access to the base. She proceeds to kill several of the scientists and destroys the base by blowing it up. Then there's a scene of August De Winter playing the organ. And that shows, as the bass blows up, he says, "Let our revels begin." When M. Appeal enters the gentleman's club, the attendant, who insists that she not enter because she is a woman, continues to prevent her from entering, at which point she karate chops him, which sends him flying down a flight of stairs. Another scene of Sir August de Winter dressed in the teddy bear suit, rhythmically slicing the face of a scientist to classical music while trying to figure out the clues to the Prospero Project. That seems more violent than other things in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
The first meeting between Emma Peel and John Steed was originally longer. You can see her walking through the corridors before she finally makes her way to the sauna. The dialogue is longer, more frank, and isn't dubbed. I mean, I would definitely take more frank.
There's so much dubbing in this movie, too.
There's a more coherent explanation of why Emma's JAG exploded after the mechanical bee attack. Emma Peel drops...
I didn't need that. They're attacked by mechanical bees for 5 minutes.
That's true. Emma Peel drops from De Winter's arms as she is escorted to his room. He doesn't let go of her and brings her back up swiftly. We probably didn't need that. Sir August De Winter has Emma Peel in his bed, he lowers the zipper of her shirt just a little more. That's gross. I'm glad that's not in the movie.
Zoinks.
More scenes of Peel and Steed walking through the corridors of Wonderland weather. Emma Peel bounces back and forth between the walls of her padded cell. Sir August De Winter drives to the World Council meeting in a Rolls-Royce snowplow after it begins snowing heavily as a result of his weather machine. More shots of Mother witnessing the worldwide destruction that the weather machine is causing. More scenes of Peel and Steed walking through De Winter's headquarters after they lower in through the telephone booth. An extra shot of Big Ben exploding. During the climactic battle between Steed and August De Winter, De Winter slices Steed with his sword several times. De Winter raises his arms as the battle nears its end. Steed becomes enraged toward the end of the battle. Know how Steed's shirt is inexplicably cut and bloodied after the fight ends. After the Prospero Project self-detonates, a countdown clock begins to tick, nearing toward the explosion. When the explosions begin, the silver dome of the headquarters is shown exploding. So, I'm going to say none of that seems necessary.
Yeah.
None of these scenes that, as described, like give us more context for what's happening, which is what we desperately need.
Yeah. I just wanted this to make any sense.
Yeah, it didn't. So I guess by preparing ourselves for Avengers Endgame with this, we can't go anywhere but up from here.
I should certainly hope not.
All right, everybody, we'll be back.
Woof.
In May with another movie to fight. Hopefully a better one. Until then, folks, thanks for listening. All these episodes of Movie Fighters are made possible by our contributors on Patreon. If you would like to make sure that we keep torturing ourselves with terrible movies, you can head over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and kick in as little as $1 a month to make this our lot in life. Chris, do you have any parting words?
This movie sucks.
How now, brown cow? I'll tell you how. Bullshit.
I'll tell you how. Bullshit.
Bye, everybody.
We love you.
This has been a Kaleidos Media production.